Welcome back to Urban Wilderness, the official Turkey Mountain podcast, a partnership of RSC Radio and the River Parks Authority. My name is Tip Crowley.
And I'm Ryan Howell with the River Parks Authority.
And we are here to tell you about Turkey Mountain, the history, the mythology, and the future of Tulsa's urban wilderness. And with urban wilderness come urban legends. Isn't that right, Ryan?
It sure is. And Turkey Mountain is full of urban legends.
So stay tuned for episode 2, Turkey Mountain, Urban Legends.
Support for this podcast comes from Fleet Feet Tulsa Broken Arrow, hosting a variety of races annually, including 5Ks, half and full marathons, and trail races. For more information or to register, visit fleetfeettulsa.com/races. And from Fat Tire Bike Shop, offering bikes and accessories for riders of all ages and skill levels, including mountain, road, gravel, and e-bikes. With locations in downtown Tulsa, South Tulsa, Broken Arrow, and Oklahoma City. More information at phattirebikeshop.com.
So Ryan, I consider myself a pretty solid researcher, and I spent a good 15 minutes on Wikipedia for Turkey Mountain, and it said that there were Vikings that visited.
It in fact does say that on the official Turkey Mountain Wikipedia page. So if it's on Wikipedia, you know it has to be true. So Turkey Mountain, because of its location and the fact that it's a woods that most anybody can visit, obviously a lot of people would go out there, and people love telling stories and they love the fiction of sitting around a campfire or whatever. It's not allowed at Turkey Mountain, by the way. And just sharing these stories. And some stories have taken on a mythology of their own because they have been purported and retold by people who are perceived as authorities and experts in the area. The first incident of the urban legend kicks off at Turkey Mountain in 1907. In 1907, the Midland Valley Railroad was under construction, and that's the railroad that runs at the base of Turkey Mountain. And there was a foreman of the construction crew named Mr. Atwell, and he saw this giant rock about 100 feet up from the base of Turkey Mountain above the train tracks, and he thought, well, that rock looks mighty peculiar. I'm going to go up there and check it out.
As one would do when they see a weird rock.
So he scrambles up to this giant boulder, and he feels air flowing around the boulder, and he thinks, oh, well, if I feel air coming from behind the boulder, that must mean on the other side there's this giant cave, so he says. And so he instructed his crew to bring a bunch of dynamite up and to blow this boulder to smithereens.
Of course.
And that's exactly what they did. They blew this boulder to the sky. And it revealed, according to Mr. Atwell, a huge mammoth cave in the side of Turkey Mountain. And Atwell and his crew went in the cave and explored it, and there were stalactites and stalagmites, and there were all these inscriptions over the cave walls that they couldn't make hide nor hair of, all of these funny scratchings that, you know, looked similar to things they had seen before, but then again, not similar at all. They were able to make out one scratching on the wall, and that was the name of J. period A. period Cox, 1864. Whoa. It was an inscription of a person and maybe the day they visited in 1864. So this would have been about 40 years before 1907. So that was the first urban legend. And this was reported in the Tulsa World. So you can imagine that Tulsa, that legend of a giant mammoth cave with all these inscriptions just went like wildfire through the city of Tulsa. And now your grandparents or your great-grandparents probably would have told you about the cave they found up on Turkey Mountain with all the inscriptions on it. So a lot of people took this very seriously and started to research it in depth. And in the 1980s, the Tulsa Archaeological Society became very involved in the history of Turkey Mountain and exploring a lot of these legends. The Tulsa Archaeological Society is made up of hobby archaeologists who don't have necessarily professional training, but they are very enthusiastic. And one of the Tulsa Archaeological Society members named William O'Brien kind of led the way. He was the go-to guy for the urban mythology of Turkey Mountain, which he believed to be the actual history of Turkey Mountain. And he used to lead tours up there on a regular basis to take people to this mammoth cave with all of these weird inscriptions in them. So according to O'Brien, if you go up in this cave and you see all of these chicken scratching, it is a conglomeration of several different languages. Every language from Celtic to Farsi to Egyptian to Viking are represented on the walls. And he believed that that was evidence that all of those people were coming to Turkey Mountain. So they were sailing across the Atlantic Ocean into the Gulf of Mexico, up the Mississippi River, taking a left onto the Arkansas, and for whatever reason stopping at Turkey Mountain in all this one particular cave to scratch their words in it. And he says that if you look at some of the letterings, there's a couple of letter combinations that are very common. And he points to the letters GWN, which is the word Gvin in Celtic, which means white or fair-haired. And he says maybe somebody with the name Gwyn from the Celts stopped here, oh, I don't know, 1,500, 3,500 years ago. He doesn't put an exact date on it. And then he says, you also see the symbols for P, I, and A, which are a Punic word that means white as well. And so he thought maybe these were from the North Iberian Peninsula, so the Basque region of Spain. These visitors were coming here, again, to scratch their initials. And this is stuff that he published in books and wrote articles about and was taken seriously by some and not seriously by others. He also talks about visitors that come from the West, so Native American tribes, such as the Ogam, that come from Colorado and inscribed in the words, "Travelers may need rest for a short time. There is water outside," in their native language. I don't know how he came to this conclusion, as there is no known Native American written language before Europeans arrived, but this is what he professed to be true. His analysis of the patina, the crust that forms over the rock, he argued that that crust would have taken thousands of years to form, and that these rock carvings were likely 3,000 years old or better. So then we fast forward into the 1500s when the Spanish arrived, and O'Brien argued that there is potentially buried Spanish gold at Turkey Mountain. And he cites his work studying ancient texts in Spain, that there were the fabled seven cities of gold in what is now known as New Mexico. And he argues that the Spanish at some point found some of this gold in New Mexico and tried to transport it back to Spain, coming across from New Mexico through the Texas Panhandle into Oklahoma, catching up on the Arkansas River and then floating down. But what happened was the Spanish, with this large amount of gold, got attacked by a native tribe right around the area of Turkey Mountain, or what he argues would have been Keystone Lake at the time. And so they fled with the gold south till they came to the cave of Turkey Mountain. And then they crawled in the cave at Turkey Mountain, and that's where they buried all of their gold and would have also scratched inscriptions in the walls. He says, too, that based on the documents that he saw from this attack of the Spanish by the Native American peoples, that in order for them to come back to that gold later, they put a giant chain around a tree. And you can still see evidence of this chain at that tree as a marker so that that chain would have been the chain that they used to attach like a raft to or whatever, so it wouldn't float away. Eventually, they reached the Gulf of Mexico and returned home, fleeing the Native Americans and leaving the gold behind. It's a shame that this gold has never been found at Turkey Mountain. But then, later on, in 1907, we have the rediscovery of this ancient cave. If you remember, you'll take it all back, where Mr. Atwood found the cave and all these beautiful inscriptions, and all of this story is all of a sudden lining up. And we have a beautiful story told. 2 days after the Tulsa World published this article about the Atwood Cave, the Tulsa Democrat, a rival newspaper at the time, published a story saying that Mr. Atwood's account was complete and utter hogwash. Tulsans had known about that cave for many years, and they even pointed to the fact that the inscription in the wall that said J. A. Cox was actually known to have been scratched by Cox's daughter, who worked at the Model Laundry Company in Tulsa, and she had inscribed his name and his approximate date of birth in the wall at some point in time just for fun. And so she actually had taken credit and claimed that inscription as her own. And so the Tulsa Democrat said, "I can't believe you, Tulsa World, you're just trying to make all this rubbish up." But those legends have persisted, and we have them today, which is why you still see on Turkey Mountain's official Wikipedia page the urban legend of the Vikings there, thanks to all of the history that was done. Now, one of the things I haven't mentioned was that I actually spent 15 years as a professional archaeologist. I trained at the University of Oklahoma for my undergraduate, and I got my graduate degree and almost got a PhD at the University of Arizona. So I know archaeology pretty well and spent 15 years doing it. And I'm here to tell you all that this is utter hogwash. There was no evidence of Vikings or Celtics or Spanish gold ever found at Turkey Mountain. None of these claims can be substantiated. They're absolute myths. But the myths still persist. I myself was, in fact, a part of the creation of one of the myths in a sort of accidental way. Around February of 2020, I thought it would be a wonderful idea to purchase a Bigfoot outfit as part of a promotion that we were doing for an event called Base Camp. Base Camp is an event that happens once a year at Turkey Mountain. It's the only time you're legally allowed to camp at Turkey Mountain. We bring out bands, bonfires, and it's a great family fun time camping around. And I thought, this event needs a mascot. Let's make it Bigfoot. So I bought a very nice Bigfoot outfit. And then coronavirus hit, and people were locked inside. And I was riding my bicycle one day, and I was thinking about my Sasquatch outfit. And the term social distance was just coming in the mix. And I had seen somebody post something about Sasquatch being the social distance champion. And then I thought, aha, wouldn't this be funny if we used the Bigfoot outfit to create a mascot for Tulsa for the social distance Sasquatch? And so I enlisted the help of some friends, and around middle of March in 2020, I dressed up as Bigfoot and tromped around Turkey Mountain. Several blurry photos of me were taken and hit the internet like wildfire. In a matter of 24 hours, 500,000 people had viewed the posts that Turkey Mountain Facebook page was making about reported sightings of Bigfoot. And so much so that Newsweek magazine reached out to us to verify the accounts of Bigfoot and to see what the real story was behind the Bigfoot at Turkey Mountain. And so a new legend for Turkey Mountain was born. And if you ask people to this day, does Bigfoot live at Turkey Mountain? People say, oh, it's possible. And we had an event where Bigfoot made an appearance not too long ago for the kids to take a photo up with. And several people at that event told me about their own Bigfoot encounters and how Bigfoot had broken into their freezers and stolen meat and done a variety of things. And so the Bigfoot community is alive and well and are now thinking that Turkey Mountain might be a tromping ground for the giant mythical creature. We just created them. literally to promote social distance in the outdoors, social distance Sasquatch. But I guarantee in 50 years, 100 years, whenever it is, people are going to find those blurry photographs of me in that outfit and argue that that is real evidence for a real Bigfoot at Turkey Mountain, even though I'm sitting here right now taking full credit for it, saying it was me. That legend will persist. And we don't mind the legends. They're fun. They're quirky. But the cave at Turkey Mountain isn't really a cave. It is just kind of a hollowy area, I guess. It's just a few feet deep. It's got some chicken scratch on it, a variety of different symbols that people put there probably from the 1920s. You'll remember that from the first episode that Turkey Mountain was a huge oil and gas area. And so in the 1907, when they originally inscribed it, chicken scratch and symbols have been placed there for years and years and years. And it's very highly likely that the old roughnecks that lived there went down in that space as well and just carved their own things in there. And to this day, you go in there now and there's pot leaves inscribed in the wall, and there's, you know, all sorts of other symbols put there from people still recreating in that space. So coming from an archaeological standpoint, just a few points of analysis. A lot of the rock at Turkey Mountain is sandstone. Sandstone is highly erosive. That's why they call it sandstone, because it eventually turns into sand. And anything that you scratch in a rock at Turkey Mountain, if it's left outside in the rain and the weather, will be gone in a matter of years. It'll literally vanish as the rocks erode. The idea that inscriptions can survive in a 1,000-year-old piece of sandstone exposed to weathering is absolutely remarkable and highly unlikely. So if you come to me and you show me these articles from the Tulsa Archaeological Society and you say, but they say it's true, they have the evidence. Well, the Tulsa Archaeological Society, while very well intentioned, does have members who are simply not archaeologists. They're just, anybody can join the Tulsa Archaeological Society, and I encourage you to. They're a great group of people that promote history and the love of archaeology, but anybody can join. So they are not necessarily experts in the field. They are just simply enthusiasts. And while we love having them, they can be a pain in the tuchus sometime as well, as they sometimes share false information, believing it wholeheartedly to be true. You know, one of the weird things about that incident was I got a ton of new Facebook friends out of the deal, which was fun, but also the variety of conspiracy theory websites out there that actually delved into the existence of Bigfoot at Turkey Mountain were astronomical. You know, there's like BigfootHunter.com or something like that, which actually went through all of the different posts, right? And they noticed that on Facebook, every one of those people had one friend or two friends in common. And one of those friends worked for a park in Tulsa. But the funny part is actually a friend of mine who works for a different park that they pinned it on. And they said, this guy works for a park. He probably dressed up as a Sasquatch. I mean, they did real research into this. And then the number of people also that reached out to me to let me know that I was going to be shot wearing a Bigfoot outfit at Turkey Mountain. I get that they mean it as sort of a joke, but they also say it as sort of serious. And I can't believe that anybody would go hunting for Bigfoot at Turkey Mountain. It's just astronomical. So I got a lot of, you need to be careful wearing that suit out there. So very interesting community, the Bigfoot community.
If somebody actually runs into Bigfoot, I really hope their first response is not to shoot them.
Yeah. Well, you know, there was you might remember one of the state Congress people not too long ago actually tried to pass a Bigfoot hunting season. And it was actually a law to trap Bigfoot, not hunt him. You couldn't shoot him, but you could legally trap him, and that they would charge a tag, a license fee for that. So you could get a Bigfoot hunting license fee, which I initially thought was a stupid idea, but then I thought, well, that's actually a great idea, because you can sell these things like wildfire, give, you know, a lot of money to the Oklahoma Fish and Wildlife Department to use for management of game, and people can have a little memento to hang on their wall if they have an official Bigfoot hunting license.
I think that we should really just leave the big feet alone. I think let them be. They want to be socially distant.
They really do, which is why they've never officially been found.
So, Ryan, if I were a Sasquatch out at Turkey Mountain, which trail would I go on first?
Which one would you go on?
Mystery.
Oh.
So you're telling us that it isn't likely that Vikings and world travelers all converged on this one cave at Turkey Mountain over the last 1,500 years or so. Is it possible that you're really just holding the Spanish gold for yourself?
I can't express this in more ways than the mountain of Spanish gold I'm sitting upon. If I did have that gold, I certainly wouldn't tell you, and I would certainly make up any lie I could to keep it all to myself. So after listening to this podcast, you might think, well, let's go try and find this magical cave. It's not worth it. I'm going to let you know right now. You might think in your head, oh, this is going to be great. It'll be like going to Disney World. When in actuality, what you need to be picturing is like a trailer park next to a sewage treatment plant. That's how amazing this place is. It is gross and disgusting because people go up there and they leave debris and they go to the bathroom on a frequent occasion. And it's just really nasty and it's 100% not worth it. Go enjoy the rest of Turkey Mountain. That's actually beautiful and amazing, and get lost on those trails.
So you've heard some urban legends from the urban wilderness. This has been episode 2 of Urban Wilderness, the official Turkey Mountain podcast, a partnership of RSU Radio and the River Parks Authority. So once again, thank you for listening. Follow us on all of the places that you listen to podcasts and on rsuradio.com. Be sure to join us for episode 3 in the future. We are going to talk about the future. It is the master plan episode of Urban Wilderness. Find out what the future holds for Tulsa's favorite little green space.
So until next time, you should go get lost at Turkey Mountain.